What's going to happen this week is I'm actually going to be preaching kind of out of turn here. I'm still preaching in Luke, but we're going to be jumping ahead, and I'm going to be preaching from Luke chapter 12, verses 35 to 40. Now, the reason why I'm doing this is it wasn't of my own accord here. Alan asked me to preach on this because he felt like I might not have time to develop something new, but also I went to a course at Regent, which is the seminary that I attended, and I did a course on preaching the parables. And so this sermon is basically what I came out with as I studied a parable. We had to look at it in the first century context and its Middle Eastern context and these things and see what we came up with. So today, that's what I'll be sharing with you. My apologies for not staying in the order, but that's what I have. Now, this parable that I'm going to be looking at, it's basically like the most hidden parable you're ever going to find. Okay, because when I was in my class, I asked people, how many of you have heard a sermon or somebody even talk about this parable? And like 3 people out of 16 put their hand up. And that's how I knew I had discovered the best parable. Okay, it's the best kept secret. So the first time that I read this parable, it actually made me super worried. Okay, and you're going to see why. It filled me with this huge sense of dread and anxiety because it's one of these God coming parables, okay? And it's this parable that talks about readiness. And one of the things that I've learned throughout my life is that readiness really is not my forte, okay? Now, I'm going to explain this to you, okay? So if you don't know me really well, this is a 100% accurate, true story, word for word, okay? This is exactly what happened. So last summer, my wife and I traveled to Kamloops, B.C., and I was officiating a wedding for a friend of mine, okay? His name's Nolan. I've known him since high school. Great guy. And we were having an awesome time as we got in the car and we started down the road. And Jen and I chatted and laughed for like 5 hours, okay, because we love car rides. It's awesome. We get to talk about all the things we haven't got to talk about in a while, listen to great music. So we're having this awesome time, and then Jen turns to me and she says, so what hotel are we going to be staying at? And, I just simply replied what I knew. I said, hey, we're not staying in a hotel. We're actually, their wedding's in a cabin by the lake there. And she looked at me surprised, and she said, can we all fit in the cabin? And calmly, I just responded with, I have no idea. Now, the weird part was that she still had more questions. And so she asked me, she said, well, shouldn't we have brought a tent? And at this point, I was becoming concerned because she was obviously becoming overly obsessed with details. So what I did is I compassionately placed my hand on hers over here, and I said, just don't worry about it. Now, to my amazement, my calming presence had no effect. And so she said, hey, if I had known that this was a camping trip, I might have prepared. We didn't bring any food, so what are we going to eat? And this is literally what happened, okay? And I blurted out, come on! It's a wedding. There's going to be loads of food. You know, Jen, I don't know what's gotten you so worked up today, but if you keep going like this, you're really going to stress yourself out. And finally, she said this. She said, let me get this straight. We're going camping with no tent, no food, and no camping gear whatsoever. And I just laughed over her lack of faith. And I said, Jennifer, you really need to quit worrying. Someone's going to take care of us. But the strange part was, like, for the rest of the trip, she kind of infected me with this thing, and I just couldn't help but wonder if maybe I had missed, like, 1 or 2 details. Now, you can ask her later what ended up happening, if you want to know. But the point of the story, it really happened, but the point is that readiness is important. For most of you, unlike me, getting ready for a camping trip would be no big deal. Like, I've seen Doug get ready for a camping trip. He's like a machine. you know, a fine-tuned machine. So for Doug, it would be no big deal, okay? But what about getting ready for God? I think that when we think about getting ready for God, this is an extra serious event. And surely, in getting ready for God, it's an event where one or two big or small details cannot be missed. So what I want to do here is I just want to read this parable in Luke. Now, is there anybody that has a Bible that'd be willing to read this for me? Mitch, nice. Okay, I'm going to need you to read it passionately, Mitch. You should come up here, though. It doesn't matter to me as long as it's not the version that I have right here. Yeah, that's sure. That sounds great. 35 to 40. Yeah, come right up to the mic here. That'd be great. Make sure you do it passionately, okay?
Oh, boy. Okay, no pressure. Be ready. Be fully dressed and have your lights shining. Be like servants who are waiting for their master to come home from a wedding party. The master comes and knocks, and the servants immediately open the door for him. When their masters see that they are ready and waiting for him, it will be a great day for those servants. I can tell you without a doubt, the master will get himself ready to serve a meal and tell the servants to sit down. Then he will serve them. Those servants might have to wait until midnight or later for their master, but they will be glad they did when he comes in and finds them still waiting. What would a homeowner do if he knew when a thief was coming? You know he would not let the thief break in. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at a time when you don't expect him.
Perfect. Thanks, Mitch. That was awesome. So can anybody see, after hearing that, can you feel how I might be worried about that? Did anyone else get a sense of this? Anybody? You guys are the most peaceful people. See? Your lives are in order. Okay, well, it worried me. But the point is, Jesus says that we have to be ready. And what he does in this parable is he begins with two pictures of readiness. The two things are a girded waist and burning lamps. Those are literally what it would be. You see, in Jesus' day, both men and women wore long, loose-fitting robes. So girding your waist meant putting a belt around your waist to prevent the robe from dragging on the ground. So you'd actually, like, take the robe, tie it through your legs, pull it through the belt, and then you'd be able to move without it restricting your movement. So this, ultimately, when you were in that position, then you were ready for work or for running or anything like that. Similarly, keeping your lamp burning was an important task for anyone who needed to work at night. Now, recently, Jen and I got the chance to go to Pender, out to the Hope Bay camp there, and they have no street lights anywhere on Pender, which I thought was absolutely crazy, because it's pitch black everywhere, you know, so you need a flashlight or something like that. And we had to go from our cabin to the bathroom, which seemed like it was 10 miles away, so, yeah, you needed a flashlight for that, too. So, it's, you know, same circumstance there, got the experience. You see, because without electricity, it's impossible to see without a lamp. So, in those days, if you're trying to trim this lamp, I don't know how all that stuff works, right? But there's a lot of upkeep on these lamps, apparently, trimming the wick and all these things. And if the lamp burns out and you have to try to relight it, they say it's almost impossible because you can't see anything, right? You can't tell what on earth's happening. So, Jesus says, you got to keep that lamp ready, okay? You got to keep that lamp burning. So, these two images reveal readiness and preparation. So simply put, what I got is step one, we must be ready and prepared. Okay? That's the first thing. The next question is, what must we be ready and prepared for? The parable goes on to tell us that it's for the return of the master. Now, in your text, it probably says something like this, and be like people who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet. Is that basically what people have in their text? It should be, right? Okay, maybe you guys aren't looking at it right now, but that's it. Be like people who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet. Now, when I was doing research on this, there's this one guy, his name's Kenneth Bailey. Okay, he was a Presbyterian missionary in the Middle East for like 40 years, And what he did is he took a lot of these parables and he went to people all over the Middle East and villagers and stuff and asked them, you know, how would you experience this? What does this mean from your perspective? And he gained all sorts of new things, new ideas for these parables. And he said that he looked up some of the Middle Eastern translations of the text, and the text can equally be translated like this, okay? And be like people who are expecting their master when he withdraws from the wedding banquet. Okay, so it all depends on the context for how it's translated. So these are the two options again. Okay, and be like people who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet versus this. And be like people who are expecting their master when he withdraws from the wedding banquet. Can you guys hear the difference there? The subtle difference? No, you can't quite hear it? Okay, let me read it to you one more time. And be like people who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet versus and be like people who are expecting their master when he withdraws from the wedding banquet. Okay, you guys got that? Okay, so the first choice is really a picture of passive slaves who only need to wait patiently for their master's party to end. While the second choice, which is what the Middle Easterners are hearing, is that it is a picture of excited slaves who eagerly anticipate that at any moment their master will slip away from their party or his party and come to them. So I'm going to go with this second option, what the Middle Easterners are saying, and that's what I'm going to tell you about today, these excited slaves. So step two then, we'd be saying this. We must excitedly anticipate our master to slip away from his party to meet us at any moment. Now, to further this image, to prove the point, is that in this parable, you have an image of a master coming home and knocking on his own door. Okay? That's pretty much strange here, but it's extremely strange in the Middle East, because the only person who knocks on a door in the Middle East at night is a stranger. Okay? Because if you were to even go to your friend's place at night, what you would do is you would just call out, "Hey, it's me, Ryan, open the door." That way you're not freaking them out, okay? Because it's like open air, they can hear you, okay? But if you're knocking on the door, that means that they don't know who you are, okay? So then the question is, why then is this master knocking on his own door? You see, the answer that the parable seems to give is it's a picture of a wealthy master. And it's not uncommon that such a wealthy master would have a large enough home that it would have a public and a private sector. Okay, so you can imagine a home like this. So then when he goes to this wedding feast, the wedding would be held in the public section while the slaves wait in readiness with their lamps burning in the private section. Okay? So then at this point, the reason for the master knocking on his own door becomes more obvious. And same with the question as to why the servants must be ready. And this is what Ken Bailey says, okay, from his research. He says this: the master is knocking rather than calling because he doesn't want his voice echoing through the whole house. Whispering cannot be heard through the door, but even the gentle knock at his door will be heard at once by the servants if they are awake and alert. You see, by knocking rather than calling, the master's voice won't echo through the whole house and announcing his absence from the wedding. So as he knocks, he expects his servants to open immediately, even at night. So you can see, if he's at a wedding in the public quarters and he sneaks out of there and goes to his private quarters and then he yells out to everybody, "Hey, it's the master!" Then the people at the party are going to be thinking, "What the heck? What happened to the host?" Right? So instead he comes, and then if he just gently knocks, it's going to go right through the door, and the servants are going to open the door right away. Okay? That picture makes sense, right? Yeah? Okay. So you guys got that. It just makes sense, right, that he would knock. So the step three, we must be ready to do the work of opening the door to the master and listening for his gentle knock. So granted that this picture is correct and you're following me on this, we must ask ourselves the key question of Why would this master slip away from the party before it's over? Now, this is the key right here, okay? If it's been boring so far, it's going to pick up, so don't worry. Those are the details, okay? Now, the answer to this question is the heart of the parable. So here we go. It's going to begin to pick up. So as we've seen, this is the story of a very wealthy master. And in the ancient world, you have rank and status, okay? That's how the world's divided. Now, in this master's house, there would be an order of importance. It would go like this. Number one, the master. Number two, the wife and children. Number three, the steward. Number four, the foreman. Number five, the permanent hired staff. Six, the day laborers. And finally, at the very bottom, you would have the slaves. Now, Jesus is telling this parable to the slaves. He says, it's these slaves, the lowest of the low, you must be ready. Okay? Now, just before he can say what they have to be ready for, he says to them, he says it this way. He says, amen, I say to you, or truly I say to you, some translations might have. Now, it's a key thing anytime Jesus says, amen, I say to you, or truly I say to you, because what he's saying is that he's going to tell you something that's really unbelievable that he wants you to believe. Now, my professor said that the words, amen, I say to you, you could translate it literally as rock, rock. That's basically what it means, okay? And he said, meaning this, it means you can build your life on this, okay? It's solid as rock. It is as solid as rock. You can build your life on this. You can build your life on this, says Jesus. And he repeats it. And so here it is. Here's the point, okay? I love this thing. According to Jesus, there is a master who is so caring. There's a master who's so different from any master we can imagine that his slaves must always be prepared, because this master has a wonderful habit of slipping away from all sorts of feasts, even wedding feasts, and unknown to all of the important and highly esteemed guests, this master secretly brings the party home. And knocking gently on the door, when it's open, the master bursts in, and immediately he girds his waist as only a slave would do, and he excitedly tells his slaves to sit down. And then he pulls out all of the goodies that he brought with him from the party. He brings the party with him, and he feeds them as they recline at the table. Now, Jim Biggs put me on to this guy. His name's Robert Farrar Capon. He's a priest and a culinary chef. And this is what he said about this parable. He said, for these servants, it's their great good luck that this master will come home in a hilarious mood. He will not come with sober assessments of past performances or with grim orders for future exertions. Rather, he will come with a song in his tipsy heart, a chilled bottle of Dom Perignon in each tail of his coat, and a breakfast to end all breakfasts in his hands. This is why Jesus says, blessed are those slaves who the master finds awake. They're blessed, happy, and joyful because their master is coming home from the wedding feast and bringing the party with them. Jesus says, blessed are they if the master comes home in the second watch, which is late at night. That's what that means there. Or the third watch, which means really early in the morning, like 6 in the morning. And they're blessed because their master will never let them down. He's going to make it home to them, and he will never leave them empty-handed. This reminds me of that concept of Psalm 23. Does anybody know the last line of Psalm 23 off the top of your head? Maybe that is the last line. Maybe I don't even have the last line. I'm thinking of the line that says, surely goodness and mercy. Is that not the last line, Scott? Okay, it's like A to the B, okay? See, he's supposed to be on vacation. What's he even doing here, eh? No, that's good, man. That's good. Okay, so I'm going to say that line in one sec here, but this is this picture of what these slaves have to be ready for. It's this wonderful act of giving on the part of God. The text actually says this thing, okay, and this is one of the ones that messed me up, is that he comes like a thief in the night. Right? That's one of the big lines here. He comes like a thief in the night. Me and Scott had this discussion because I was talking about it with one of my men's groups. You know, what does it mean that he comes like a thief in the night? And then I had to get them off of the idea that the devil was the one that came like a thief in the night, right? I'm just like, guys, no, it's not the devil, okay? It's talking about God. Like, well, why is God trying to steal from me? Like, no, he's not trying to steal from you. The point is, thieves are the ones that come when you're not ready. Okay, that's what he's emphasizing there. That's what it says. The Son of Man comes when you don't expect. That's the image there, okay? So the thief means he's coming unexpectedly. And so the context that Luke's driving home is that he does it to surprise us with his goodness. So that's like the end of Psalm 23, which is the A part to the B that Scott's saying. That surely goodness and mercy will chase after me all the days of my life. Now, I try and drive this home to the young adults saying, it's like you got to imagine with that you're walking down a dark alley and then you hear a noise and you look back thinking, what was that? But it was nothing. And you turn around and then, and goodness and mercy jump out of the shadows and they start chasing you down. And I think that this is the kind of image that reveals what kind of God we worship, this playful and cheerful God. And so Jesus is telling us, listen, you got to imagine a new kind of master. Now I'm really going to drive it home, okay? So step one, you must always be ready and prepared. Step two, you must always excitedly anticipate your master to slip away from his party. Step three, you must always be listening for his gentle knock at the door. Why? Because your master has a wonderful habit. He comes with lavish feasts at all hours of the night to people who do not and cannot ever deserve it. That's why it's written to slaves. Right? No slave would ever expect this. It would never happen to a slave. But Jesus says, slaves, get ready for this. You must always be prepared for your master's goodness. You must anticipate it. You must excitedly expect it. Because you can be sure, as certain as the rising of the sun, that he will come and knock on the door, holding every good thing in his hands. You see, this master that Jesus describes is looking for slaves or servants, not to serve him, but slaves and servants that he can serve. He's looking for slaves and servants who wait up all night and can't stop asking one another, what's he going to bring next? What other good thing can we possibly expect? Let me tell you how he outdid himself the last time. How can he possibly top that? You see, he's looking for servants who are always ready with burning lamps to receive every good thing he has to give as often as he wants to give it. Now, if it hasn't quite sunk in, I'm going to present you with one final image here to drive this picture home, okay? Now, what I've done is I'm going to jump you into my imagination to show this, like what Jesus is trying to get across, okay? So I'm going to tell it to you as a bit more of a narrative so you can grab hold of this. So imagine with me that this unimaginably good master is at the wedding feast. And you know, he stayed as long as he could, rubbing shoulders with fancy and important people. But in his heart, he yearns to go back and remind his slaves how important they are to him. You see, he worries about them. Oh, sure, he tells them not to worry, but he worries because they so easily fall into thinking that he would rather party with the president than the poor. He particularly worries about his slaves' fragile hearts because he knows how easily they think of themselves as nothing. So when he can bear it no longer, he begins. He excitedly sneaks every piece of the party he can find into every possible pocket that he can sneak it, and in a blink, he's gone. He's really outdone himself this time. He manages to gather all of the very best. He tells himself that this will be a feast that none of them will ever forget. He only hopes his slaves will be awake, because in his efforts to make this night extra special, it's taken so long that it's become morning. The servants have never had to wait until the third watch for him before. So he girds himself, and he runs as fast as he can through the courtyard between the public and private houses. If his high-profile guests saw him, he would be shamed. But he doesn't care. He would shame himself 1,000 times over if it only meant that his slaves could see the way that he honors them. Finally, he gets to the door, and he can't knock fast enough. But there's no answer. And so he pauses. Again, no answer. A third time, he begins to knock. And he stops and looks, and he sees it, a hint of light. Indeed, the door is unlatched. A rush of compassion washes over him. The slaves must have fallen asleep. They would be so ashamed that they had failed to adequately serve him. But he could think of no greater opportunity to remind them that he is the one who serves them. For the first time, he would surprise them like a thief in the night, at a moment when they least expect it. So a grin comes over his face, and he thinks to himself, "This time, they won't see my goodness coming. What a wonderful surprise it will be." And with one great push, he bursts the door open. The slaves are startled awake, and they jump to their feet. Groggy from sleep, as their eyesight clears, they can only laugh. For there is their master, belt half girded, with wine and food all over him, setting the table for them. Isn't that just what communion is? So let me ask you, are you ready and prepared each and every moment to receive the astounding goodness of the Master? Do you eagerly anticipate that no matter how dark it gets, his goodness will come to you at any moment? Are you listening for his gentle knock at the door, even now? You see, if not, Jesus wants you to know this Master, because this Master comes when you least expect him. I think that all of our lives, you know, we begin to think that it's our job to serve the Master, and we're serving the Master, and this is what it's about. But I think that what Jesus wants us to know is that all of our lives, the Master has been serving us. This is a parable on readiness. It is a parable on being ready to receive the outrageous, extravagant goodness of God. And so my question to you is, are you ready for this? Let's pray.